or one collaborative group of artists will be awarded 20 hours of studio recording and production time with a KBOO mixologist in order to create a piece of sound art that will be publicly presented at the end of the residency. The Artist in Residence program is open to artists of all disciplines whose project proposals include sound as a major component. Applications for the KBOO 2017 Artist in Residence are due Friday, April 7th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/kboo AIR 2017.
Good morning. You are tuned to KBOO Portland, and the time is now just 30 seconds before 10 o'clock. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 10:15 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein welcomes Dan Egan, author of The Death and Life of the Great Lakes. They'll discuss the ecological catastrophe happening right before our eyes. At 11, Health Watch talks to Dana Lavoie about ways to prepare for and treat menopause naturally. And at 11:30, Madness Radio asks if beliefs in witchcraft, voodoo, and magic mean people are less educated, or are these stories at the heart of reality for all cultures? We'll hear from the author of The Geography of Madness. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. Now, stay tuned for Between the Lines Radio, which covers the GOP's failure to replace Obamacare and the growing pressure on the Senate to block Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Neil Gorsuch.
Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. Despite having a strong majority in the U.S. House of Representatives, President Donald Trump and the Republican Party failed in their effort to pass the American Health Care Act, their proposed replacement for Obamacare. After so many years of overblown rhetoric condemning President Obama's signature health care achievement, and passing more than 50 bills to repeal the Affordable Care Act, it was stunning to see the GOP utterly fail in their effort. The health care legislation offered by the Republicans was rejected by an overwhelming majority on all sides of the political spectrum. Across the country, working families flocked to town hall meetings with their federal legislators to denounce the GOP plan that would have thrown 24 million people off their current health insurance policies. From the right, members of the so-called Freedom Caucus took a hard-line position that the government should have little or no role at all in the nation's health care system. After his first major legislative defeat, Trump blamed the Democrats and warned that Obamacare would soon implode, bringing all sides back to the negotiating table to hammer out a new health care measure. The real estate billionaire, who complained that no one knew health care was so complicated, hinted that his administration could sabotage Obamacare by non-enforcement of existing tax penalties and/or withholding subsidies. Your reporter spoke with Dr. Carol Paris, president of Physicians for a National Health Program, who assesses the failure of the Trump GOP health care bill and talks about her group's long-term campaign to establish a universal single-payer health care system in the U.S., such as the proposed Medicare for All.
Neither party is championing a piece of legislation that actually is going to solve the problem. And what I'm seeing is that the groundswell of energy by people, just everyday working class people, since the election of Donald Trump, has really galvanized an interest in what's going on in our country. And one of the major areas people focused on was health care. So while many people were attending town halls to voice their defense of the Affordable Care Act, what we saw over and over at these town halls is that as soon as someone stood up and said, "But what I'd really like is a national Medicare for all," the whole place would begin to cheer and clap. So there really is a growing movement and interest in moving beyond the Affordable Care Act, which we at least now can do because we don't have to deal with the, hopefully, we will not be in the future be dealing with the American Health Care Act. But it's time to move on. The time is now to get on with doing what we should have done in 2009.
Dr. Paris, say a word, if you would, about the condition of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. Donald Trump and many Republicans are saying Obamacare is in a death spiral, that it's ready to implode. Trump even said after the failure of the Republican replacement plan that politically it'll be very good for Republicans if he just stands aside and lets Obamacare collapse. It'll hurt the Democrats. What can you tell us about this death spiral? Is that accurate?
That is not accurate. Although there are things that the Republicans can do to make it more difficult for the Affordable Care Act to continue to provide at least the provisions that have been helpful to the people who both are insured now through the Medicaid expansion and the people that are able to purchase insurance through the subsidies. And I'm not taking anything away from that. And no, I think even in my state of Tennessee, which did not originally accept the Medicaid expansion, there is now a huge groundswell of people who are demanding the Medicaid expansion. And I think that that will make the Affordable Care Act more sustainable for a longer period of time. But please don't think that I'm saying that that is good enough. Even at full implementation, we're going to have 28 million people uninsured in this country. And let's say we do, the other states that didn't expand Medicaid, let's say they do expand it. So maybe it's not more than 20 million uninsured. Is that still okay in a country where we're spending more, almost twice what any other country spends, and they're covering all of their citizens, and we're leaving anywhere from 20 to 50 million people uninsured? So the Affordable Care Act, even at its best, is going to leave people uninsured, and even more importantly, it's leaving people underinsured. So it's one thing to have a health insurance card, but when you still have to stop and decide whether or not you can afford to use that insurance to go to a doctor because you've got a several thousand dollar deductible and maybe you just don't have that money right now, that's what underinsurance means. So I don't find that acceptable, and I don't think most people find that acceptable. And that's the growing number of people in this country who have insurance are actually underinsured. They may not realize that they are one job loss or one major illness away from bankruptcy. And the Affordable Care Act is not going to change that.
How is your group, Dr. Paris, moving to capitalize on this moment of crisis in the U.S. healthcare system to really provoke a serious debate about a universal health care single-payer system, such as Medicare for All? Senator Bernie Sanders, a former presidential candidate, Vermont senator, is planning to propose a Medicare for All bill in the U.S. Senate. But at the same time, you've also got states moving to try their hand at implementing their own universal health care system, such as California. Which route do you think will bear the most fruit?
I do think that the California effort is going to be a really good one to watch because it is such an enormous population, and they have such a groundswell of support for their legislation in California. So I think that's going to be a very important situation to follow. As far as the position of PNHP, we've been working with Congressman Conyers' H.R. 676 for a long time, and we know that legislation, and we back that legislation. That truly is improved and expanded Medicare for All. And much of the economic policy work that Dr. Himmelstein and Dr. Woolhandler do, their most recent one suggesting a savings of $506 billion a year if we implemented improved and expanded Medicare for All, is based on that piece of legislation. It remains to be seen what Senator Sanders' legislation is actually going to be. So I just think the devil's in the details, and I'm going to be interested to see how this evolves.
That was Dr. Carol Paris, president of Physicians for a National Health Program. Learn more about the group's campaigning for a national single-payer universal healthcare system by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org. Since the death of the Supreme Court's most ardent conservative, Antonin Scalia, on February 13th last year, his seat has been vacant. That's because Republicans who control the Senate blocked a hearing or a vote on President Obama's nominee, Judge Merrick Garland. The unprecedented decision by the GOP to deny Mr. Obama a nomination to an open seat on the High Court has bred resentment among Democrats and poisoned the atmosphere surrounding President Trump's recent nomination of Judge Neil Gorsuch to fill the vacancy. During his Senate confirmation hearing, Gorsuch's record of appellate court rulings raised concerns that his elevation to the Supreme Court will restore a 5-4 conservative majority that will rule against workers and consumers, jeopardize women's reproductive rights, and threaten the separation between church and state. Progressive activist groups across the country, alarmed at the consequences of Gorsuch being seated on the Supreme Court, are pressuring Senate Democrats to do everything possible to derail his confirmation. While Democrats with 48 seats could wage a filibuster to deny Republicans the 60 votes needed to move the nomination to a final up or down majority vote, Republicans have threatened to invoke the so-called nuclear option that would change Senate rules to prevent all future filibusters against Supreme Court nominees. Your reporter spoke with Jim Dean, chair of Democracy for America, who explains why his group supports a filibuster against Judge Gorsuch, risking the end of Senate High Court filibusters.
This is a stolen seat. Not allowing even a hearing for the Obama's nominee really dictates that something needs to be settled here in terms of how nominations are going to go. I mean, are we going to have a real process as we should have had in the last year of the Obama presidency? Or are we going to play this kind of game? And I think the Democrats really need to put their foot down and say, we're not going to play this game. That we had a qualified nominee in Merrick Garland, a person I had a few disagreements with, but qualified nonetheless. And we really just can't allow that kind of opposition that Republicans put up to keep going and be part of the political process. And it's the kind of thing that has gotten so many people turned off about politics. The second thing has to do with Gorsuch himself. And in my opinion, I don't think he's qualified to bring on the Supreme Court. And the reason I say that is because the work that he has done so far indicates to me that he simply is not grounded in the reality of the lives that Americans have to live. I think if you look at the dissenting opinion that he gave in the famous truck driver case, and certainly his really is almost ignorance about the separation of church and state and the rights of women in the Hobby Lobby case, those are rulings that are really point to someone who is really ideological, grounded in ideology much more than he's grounded in the rule of law and much more than he's grounded, again, in the real lives of Americans. So the pick of this current occupant of the White House, who also said that he was litmus testing Supreme Court nominees in favor of those who would overturn Roe versus Wade. And notwithstanding Gorsuch's non-answers to the Senate panel, I think that's something that should give us all pause. So the good news is I don't believe that they're going to get through this without a filibuster. I think the Democrats have the votes to do that. And I think if that happens, the Republicans will be faced with a very dire choice. One, to change the rules and get rid of the filibuster, which is going to have very long-term and very important big consequences, or two, go back to the drawing board and start actually governing with Democrats like they used to, whether the Democrats are an opposition party or not. I think it's time for a showdown on that. I think we've been going for that for a very, very long time, and no better time than the present to have that out.
That was Jim Dean, chair of Democracy for America. For more analysis and commentary on the Supreme Court nomination of Judge Neil Gorsuch, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org. You've been listening to Between the Lines, a weekly program presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. Between the Lines is produced and distributed by Squeaky Wheel Productions. If you have suggestions for topics and guests, please contact Between the Lines through our website at btlonline.org, where you can hear our current and archive programs in MP3 and streaming audio, and support our show. There you can also subscribe to free weekly podcasts, program summaries, and interview transcripts. Follow us on Facebook at Between the Lines Radio News Magazine and on Twitter at BTL Radio News. Our theme music was written by Richard Hill and Jody Gray and performed by Mikata. This week's program was produced by Susan Bramhall, Richard Hill, Anna Manzo, Bob Nixon, Gary Trujillo, Melinda Tuhus, and Jeff Yates. Thanks for listening on WREK in Atlanta, Georgia, KPSQ in Fayetteville, Arkansas, KALS in Seattle, and more than 50 other community stations across the U.S. For Between the Lines, I'm Scott Harris.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio